to the political cesspool known worldwide as the South's foremost populist radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Political Cesspool. We're with you live on AM 1380 WLRM radio this evening, streaming live, loud, and clear throughout the airwaves, the greater Memphis area and the Mid-South in general, and on the internet at our internet headquarters, thepoliticalcesspool.org. It is Friday evening, September 21st, and as advertised and as promised by popular demand, it is our esteemed honor to welcome back our good friend, Mr. Mark Weber from the Institute of Historical Review. Mark Weber is the director of the IHR and has written and lectured extensively on the power and impact of the pro-Israel lobby and Jewish Zionist power. He is quite possibly America's preeminent expert on this issue. He is going to be joining us on the air this evening to discuss the power and impact of the Zionist lobby and the Fuhrer generated by a best-selling new book, The Israel Lobby and U.S. Foreign Policy, written by Professors Walt and Mearsheimer. Joining us from California, Mark Weber. Mr. Weber, can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Thank you very much for that very kind introduction, James, and it's a pleasure to be on your show again.
It's always a pleasure to welcome you back to the show, Mark, and the introduction was quite well-deserved and earned, I should say. Well, it's good to have you back, and I know some interesting developments have occurred since your last appearance with us. I believe that was midsummer. Here we are approaching the beginning of fall, and it's good to have you back on a quarterly basis. I think we've got a nice little rotation going here, but big book. The essay, I guess it was an essay, I don't know what you would call it, but it's been turned into a book by Professors Stephen Walt and John Mearsheimer, and quite encouragingly, this very scholarly work has skyrocketed up the bestseller list, which is quite an oddity for such a highbrow piece of literature. This is not a Harlequin novel. What's your take on it?
Well, you're right. A lot of the credit for this goes to the Internet. Now, the importance of this book and the work of Professors Walt and Mearsheimer in the last year has been to bring a tremendous amount of attention on something that everyone who cares about America and cares about the world knows, and that is the tremendous power of the pro-Israel lobby in America to twist or bend American foreign policy in a way that's harmful to American interest and the interests of the world. And this is a point that's made in very, very tremendous detail in this new book by Walt Mearsheimer. Now, when I say the power of the Internet, I want to say something about the background. Walt and Mearsheimer negotiated for 2 years with the Atlantic magazine to write an article on this subject, and it went back and forth, and finally the Atlantic, which is a prestigious, kind of intellectual, highbrow journal, decided not to publish it. And then it was published in London, in the London Review of Books. Now, in the pre-internet age, it would have appeared, and that would have been about it, but in the internet age, within hours of its appearance on the website of the London Review of Books, it was all over the world. I think within an hour, maybe 10 persons had already sent it to me. It set off a tremendous furor, a tremendous controversy, because the authors of this book are two of the most eminent experts in America on international relations. If they had been unknown or secondary people, nobody would have paid so much attention. But these two men have a very prominent record of solid books on other areas of international affairs. And so when they lent their names to this first article, and now this book, it has a much greater impact.
Well, anyway,
because of the tremendous influence of the article and the tremendous discussion it set off, the publisher in New York, Forrest Strauss Giroux, gave them a contract to put it out as a book, and as you mentioned, it's now a bestseller both on the New York Times and the Los Angeles Times bestseller list.
That is such outstanding news, because as they received the first wave of the seventh level of hell that they created for themselves in addressing this issue from an honest perspective, you know, that is a white-knuckle experience, and I am very pleased to see that these gentlemen have not acquiesced and have not kowtowed to the forces of cultural Marxism, that they are standing by their convictions and speaking up for the truth as they see it. And as you mentioned, they are certainly not only just experts on this matter, but they hail from some pretty prestigious universities, and that's another thing that is encouraging, because I had figured that at places like Harvard, where one of these professors hails, they had all but been weeded out.
Right. Well, Professor John Mearsheimer is at the University of Chicago. Mm-hmm. Professor Stephen Walt is at Harvard. And in fact, they hold very high positions there, very prominent positions. They're very worried, as are many people in our military, in our government, that the U.S. alliance with Israel is harmful, it's costing us a lot, and it's going to be a much higher cost as the years go on. Walt Mearsheimer makes the point that whatever arguments you might give for the usefulness of the U.S. support for Israel during the Cold War era, those arguments don't cut any water anymore. And now the U.S. alliance with Israel is almost completely harmful to American interests and to world peace. They argue in their book that Israel should be treated as a normal country. It shouldn't be given a big special break, which it does get, because for sentimental reasons, but more importantly, because politicians are in mortal fear of losing their positions if they call even for an even-handed, balanced policy in the Middle East. And it, during this past year, the truthfulness of what they have said has been highlighted by the tremendous abuse and smears hurled at former President Jimmy Carter for a book that he came out with during this past year, Palestine, Peace, Not Apartheid. Now, his main motive in writing the book was to stress the human rights issues that are involved, but Walt and Mearsheimer are primarily interested in the fact that the U.S. alliance with Israel, the one-sided support for Israel, is harming American interests and harming the interests of world peace.
Right.
Now, this is something that just about every specialist, every informed observer of the world scene understands, but like, as you know, on so many issues, we have one view of our government and the powers that be, and then the reality and what American people think is something very different. And this book highlights the tremendous gap between the reality and the truth on one hand and our short-sighted and harmful policy on the other.
Well, you're exactly right, and to go back to something we were talking about earlier, it is just so uplifting to know that there are still publishers who would take this essay and expand it into a book after they had received so many attacks, and to know that there are still people in this country that have backbone and will engage in a frank and candid discussion on these issues that have been said to be taboo.
Right.
by those who seek to subvert American control of our government and media. That's something that I take a lot of encouragement in, as I mentioned before. And we had one of our Washington correspondents on the program last week, Peter Gemma, and he stated what you state, that this is not a so-called anti-Semitic screed, whatever that is. This is just a very level-headed look at the issue from, I guess, in today.
Their good intentions. They go out of their way to say, we're friends of Israel. We don't want to destroy Israel. In fact, we think the United States should support Israel if their security is really in danger. It's absolutely absurd to characterize them as haters or bigots or so forth. And in that sense, they're similar to Jimmy Carter. You can say a lot of bad things about Jimmy Carter, but the idea that he's a hate monger or he's a person who is motivated by hate of Jews is just absurd. And what Walt and Mearsheimer are trying to do is bring America to its senses. But this is a really great task, because on our domestic policy and on our international policy, the powers that be are pushing our country and our people in a direction that more and more clearly, I think, is harmful and even suicidal. You've had as a guest on your show Pat Buchanan, and he's made these points over and over very eloquently, time and time again as well. And there are a few individuals like this who are, you might say, voices in the wilderness. Unfortunately, or fortunately for them, they don't have to be reelected, and so they can speak with some authority and without the same fear that our politicians and the people in our media have. They're tremendously intimidated. And Jimmy Carter made the point, there's not a single politician in public life, if he's running for president or if he's at all prominent, who can even call for a balanced or even-handed U.S. policy in the Middle East without committing political suicide.
Well, Mr. Weber, I know my co-host Eddie the Bombardier Miller wants to take a crack at you, and then I want to fast forward to an event that you attended earlier this week where you can provide us with a first-hand accounting. But before that, Eddie?
Yeah, Mr. Weber, this is Eddie the Bombardier here. I was going to ask you a question. Do you think that the Israeli lobby could be as powerful as they are if they lost their support from the Amen Corner here in the United States?
In the Amen Corner, what place?
From the Amen, if they, in other words, if the Amen Corner, the Judeo-Christian Church, especially in the South.
Right. Well, when you say the Amen Corner, Pat Buchanan once referred to the U.S. Congress as the Amen Corner. But, no, I know what you mean. You're asking about how powerful, how important is the role of... pro-Israel evangelicals,
right, right,
supporting Israel. Well, this is a very, very important question, and I've talked a lot about it as well. And Walt and Mearsheimer are right in saying, okay, yes, it does exist, but its power and influence should not be overestimated. Remember this, on every issue that the evangelicals care about, they're on the losing end, except when it comes to supporting Israel, because their support for on this issue, they seem to have power only because they're allied with the Jewish lobby, with Jewish Zionist power in the United States. On the issues that evangelicals care about other than that, they have their backs to the wall. For example, evangelicals are against same-sex marriage or sanctioning homosexuality in the U.S. military. But over the last 5, 10, 15 years, they've suffered one setback after another. Not only that, the vast majority of Christian churches in the United States do not share the view of the evangelicals. The evangelical pro-Israel group is confined largely to the South. It's boisterous, but it's by no means a majority, even of Christians in the United States.
Well, and beyond that, it makes absolutely no sense to me as a Christian how anybody could be in such a parasitic relationship to say that the relationship that these so-called Christians and these churches that we're talking about have with the bandit state of Israel and left-wing anti-Christian Zionism, to say that is a parasitic relationship would be the understatement of the century. But that's a topic for another program. I know
that's
it does.
A topic for another time. But yes, I agree. I mean, a truly sincere Christian, I think, would have more solidarity with fellow Christians in the Middle East who are oppressed or dispossessed and oppressed by Israel, rather than with the people who have already in this country rejected Christ.
Well, we've addressed that problem so many times, and we'll continue to do that on this program. But it does correlate with what we were talking about earlier, in so much as how has the Zionist lobby in America been empowered? Well, this demographic of our population is certainly a big reason for that.
Right.
Anyway, getting back to what we were talking about with regards to the new book out by Walt and Mearsheimer, I know, Mark, we had an opportunity to have you on earlier in the week, but I purposefully wanted to delay your appearance until tonight because you had a chance to drive from your office in Costa Mesa with a couple of colleagues to attend the meeting in Los Angeles at which Professor Stephen Walt and John Mearsheimer were talking about their new book. I guess it was a book signing, but they also made some speeches. So what was that like?
Right. Well, Walt and Mearsheimer had been going around the country to promote their book, and a group of us drove up to Los Angeles on Tuesday evening to hear Walt and Mearsheimer speak in at a large meeting. There were so many people at the meeting that people had to be turned out. The hall where they spoke was completely packed. It's associated with the University of UCLA, University of California, Los Angeles. The hall was completely packed. People who arrived late were diverted to another hall where they could view everything on a closed circuit screen. And it was the audience overwhelmingly was sympathetic. It's one more example when it comes to issues that people care about, such as immigration. What the public thinks is one thing, and what the politicians say and do is another thing. There was a minority of unhappy pro-Israel Jewish activists there, but overwhelmingly the audience was very supportive of Walt Mearsheimer. After they presented their lectures, which were essentially summaries of what's in the book, there was a book signing afterwards, and the copy of the book that I had with me, they kindly signed for me, and of course for a lot of other people as well. But they were both in very good form, and the two men spoke with great confidence and also with tremendous authority. And the proof of how confident and how authoritative their arguments are is the very skillful and confident way that they handled the sometimes very hostile questions that came during the question and answer period. They've heard it all before, all the arguments that have could be thrown at them, they're very, very familiar with, and they were able to handle them very well because they're complete used to that. And just like I am, anybody who's been at this very long is familiar with the usual kind of arguments that are made in refutation or attempted refutation of these points. But anyway, it was a very interesting meeting and time, and there was a very good spirit to the whole thing.
I'll tell you what, that is a revelation to know that these gentlemen received such a rock star welcome there, because this is, you know, for lack of a better word, this isn't a sexy issue. This isn't as though they're presidential candidates where you get that kind of where you can draw that kind of crowd because the media has made you into something bigger than you are. To see them with such a vitally important issue for the future of our nation, to see them be so well received, I'll tell you what, it's something you would never know if it was left to the mainstream controlled establishment media and press to tell you about. Only because of radio programs such as this and organizations like the Institute for Historical Review would you know the truth, and would you realize that not all Americans are as dumb as you think.
Right, very true. Well, Americans care a lot now about the direction of our country in international affairs. It's not just the catastrophic adventure in Iraq that the president and the neocons and the Israel lobby have pushed us into. It's now the threat of a new war against Iran. And the amazing thing is that the very same people trotting out the very same empty arguments that they did in the case of Iraq are now arguing for a new strike against Iran. And it's amazing that they have any credibility. One Washington person who's very knowledgeable, Sam Francis, who I knew, and he died. I remember, about a year or 6 months after the beginning of the Iraq War, I asked him, I said, well, aren't the neocons now also discredited because things have turned out very differently than they had predicted and expected, that their power should be gone? And he said, no. And he was right, and he sort of gave me a good dose of sobering up there, because they're still in power.
First of all, I'd like to say, Mr. Weber, you knocked you knocked it out of the park. I could not. The question I asked you a minute ago about the Amen Quarter, you knocked it out of the park. I agree with you wholeheartedly. And my last question, going back to that, is: Do you think that the Amen Quarter will ever
been sent into wars or conflicts that they shouldn't have been sent into? Americans like to believe that our wars are all good wars, that we fight for freedom, that we're the good guys, and the other people are the bad guys.
It's
very hard. It's hard to give a response when somebody says, Are you telling me that those young men who died in Iraq died in vain? Well, that's a hard thing to say. But when our leaders send young men, young Americans, off to die in a war based on lies and deceit for interests that are not American, that's a very, very terrible thing for any mother or wife or daughter to have to accept.
That is an excellent observation. Very interesting, because what you're saying is it's more painful for people to sober up and allow the scales to fall from their eyes and admit that they were wrong and that the sacrifices that have been made in blood and treasure have been wasted than to continue to charge forward into wherever this is going.
Right. I mean, many of the evangelicals are very patriotic Americans. They want to believe in America.
That's right.
And their motives and their hearts are good. And they don't want to give up on America. And I understand that. And it's very, very difficult to disabuse oneself of the notion of America being this country we always do the right thing and we're the good guys. That's very difficult. And I understand that, and I try to be very sensitive to that. But look, it's like in the just as an individual, so also for a nation. Usually people, when they face a problem, tend to just do more emphatically whatever they're used to doing. They don't change their fundamental behavior until there's a real setback, a real problem, like a person is drinking too much. It's not until he finally almost kills himself or is fired from his job and he doesn't have a home anymore that he finally says, I've got to change. And just in our country, things are hurtling so badly, so quickly, that many Americans are saying, oh my gosh, this is very serious. And it's very hard for people to accept that the path and the policies we've had for a long time might be very fundamentally wrong.
Outstanding commentary. I wanted to ask you one more thing before we come to the conclusion of another great interview with you, and then I want to allow you, obviously, the opportunity to promote and plug your website and your organization. You mentioned Iran earlier. You had the opportunity to provide a radio interview on a broadcast on Iranian on an Iranian radio program that was English-speaking. Can you tell us about that?
Well, I've done quite a few interviews with foreign media, including with the external service of the Iranian government. But I've done them with other governments, too, or other radio stations and networks, including the BBC and Radio Netherlands and Canada and so forth. But, the Radio Iran asked me also to comment on the Walt Mearsheimer book, which, of course, has very large implications for that country. In fact, there's a chapter of the book by Walt Mearsheimer specifically devoted to U.S. relations with Iran and the danger of a war with Iran. But I want to also just mention, plugging the IHR, that was done, in a sense, by our enemies, so to speak, at the very meeting that we were at Tuesday night.
You know, Mark, I was going to ask you about that, but I didn't want to put you on the spot, but I did notice in one of your reports that your reputation as a leader in this movement preceded you, and I don't even know if they knew you were going to be there.
No, they didn't, I'm sure not. In fact, every person who attended the Walton Mearsheimer lecture was handed flyers by Jewish activists at the meeting, and one of the flyers, in fact the most colorful one, was a full-color brochure attacking Walton Mearsheimer and their book, and as evidence about how bad this book is, on the last page there's a section about how the book has been spoken of well by so-called extremists, including me. And there's a picture of me. All I said was the book is a very important breakthrough book, and it's carefully written and judiciously worded, which are all quite true, I think. But the importance isn't whether these things are true or not true, but this kind of propaganda is intimidating. People don't like to be smeared. But in this, you just have to take from the very beginning and understand that when you get involved in this kind of a struggle, you're going to be smeared by these people, because tremendous amounts of power are at stake, and a great deal is at stake here, and that people do not give up power easily or quickly.
I'm sure that the distribution of that flyer elicited a chuckle out of you. I would have autographed it and handed it back to whoever handed it to me.
Well, when I was handed the brochure, I didn't look at it right away, so it's not until we sat down that I noted with surprise to see picture of myself on the thing. But this is, well, I'm in good company. I mean, the book has been endorsed and applauded by many, many honorable and observant, intelligent people around the world. And citing me and so forth, just in an effort to try to discredit the book. But it's not going to work. I mean, the book has been thoroughly smeared in the New York Times and by the Los Angeles Times and by a lot of the regular people. But around the world, and even in America here, the book and the message of the book and the importance of the book is understood very widely, and we can give a lot of credit to that, to the work of people on the internet and groups like the IHR, but also programs like your program here.
Well, thank you very much for saying that. We spent, obviously, well, that was our topic this evening, was to discuss the book and the impact it's making and the encouraging impacts that it's making. But certainly, your day job is the director of the Institute for Historical Review. Before we round out the interview this evening and go to our next commercial break, give us a capsule of what the IHR is all about and how people can get more information and support your work.
We try to put the past in perspective, because any understanding about the present and any concern about the future has to be based, must be based, on an intelligent and an aware understanding of the past. That's the work of the Institute for Historical Review. We try to bring the present into historical context. Now, that may seem dull to a lot of people, but I think anyone visiting our site who has any interest at all in national and world affairs and what's going on in the world will find our site interesting. It's IHR.org. It's pretty easy to navigate. There's a lot of fascinating material there, a tremendous archive, tremendous library, and a lot on even the homepage, which I think people will find really of interest, and I encourage people to visit our website.
I second that notion, and certainly, ladies and gentlemen, you've heard from Mark Weber this evening, who is one of our movement's biggest leaders, particularly as it applies to the power and influence of the Zionist lobby and its corrosive effects on our government and way of life. And Mark, another highly successful segment, my friend. I look forward to the next one already and wish you the best in the meantime, and certainly look forward to the day when we'll have the opportunity to break bread together.
Thank you very much, James. It's a pleasure again to be on your show.
We'll talk to you again soon. Stay safe.
Bye-bye.
Mark Weber,
everybody, director of the Institute for Historical Review, certainly a celebrity as it applies to many of our people who are looking for leadership on a question that is so important, but unfortunately, when you look towards the alphabet soup organizations like ABC, CBS, NBC, Fox, you're only going to be hearing one side of the story. Mark Weber is the best in the business when it comes to articulating this cause from a America First point of view, and he was our guest yet again tonight. Ed?
I could not agree more. You know, the way he dissected the all the questions we ask, and his analytical skills were second to none in explaining what is going on in the United States with the Israel lobby and how our foreign policy is really going to lead us to destruction. Everything he said, I just could not agree more with. Naturally, he said it much more eloquently. And